You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 29 June. We had Japanese retail sales out earlier, year on year, up 5.3%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. We've got a fairly chunky fuel price decrease coming Wednesday. We also had all sorts of Middle East rockets and chaos over the weekend and on Friday, but oil prices behaving. I want to get a sense around SA consumers, and maybe we'll touch on South Korea. Chatting with Alan Gray, how the uncertainty feeds bad behavior in investors, and then we're in stocks of stocks and Strauss. They've got a fund looking to universities and alumni as sources of investable technology. Let's dig into details around that. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, building and construction sector poised for better days. Encouraging signs despite the significant number of project cancellations and postponements. Business Day, Mr. Price warns global shocks could derail retail recovery. Says geopolitical tensions, supply chain disruptions may create uncertainty. Morning markets, the US was red, although the S&P a couple of points down, 0.05%. The Nasdaq off just over 1%. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney down 0.1%. Tokyo just over 0.5% lower. Hong Kong up just over 2%. And Tencent up just over 3%. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 4,071. Brent is the red at 72.48. Platinum 1,629. Palladium 1,209. The rand is 16.46. Bitcoin 59,900. Top 40 opening call. Green open 380 odd points. 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the time. I think we all had the same thought on Friday when we heard that Iran and the US was flinging rockets and the like at each other. Markets have don't seem to worry about it. So we are sort of, I suppose, on track for that peace in our time. More importantly, massive petrol diesel decreases coming on Wednesday. Your sense around the state of the consumer, because, of course, if we go back to February, everything was like a little bit, I don't know, looking a whole lot better. Now it's perhaps less so. Where are you thinking around SA consumer stocks?
Yeah, morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on. Quite a bit to unpack. I mean, let's start with the obvious, as you said, headlines over the weekend, you know, the two of them like lobbing missiles at each other. I thought, oh my goodness, here we go again, oil up again. But, you know, oil up about 1% this morning, not great shakes. S&P futures actually up on the day. I mean, let's concentrate. Wednesday, the big one. Hopefully, all intents and purposes, we get a big drop. R1.44 for petrol, up to 2.60 on diesel. Those will be the biggest single month cuts we've actually seen in years. and obviously, two things driving that. I mean, obviously, the Brent's pretty much halved. And obviously, the Rand is reasonably steady. We're looking now like 16.50-ish at the moment. SA consumer, it's a tricky one, eh, isn't it? So, I mean, if you look at some of the consumer stocks, some are holding up. The big ones like, you know, obviously ShopRite's hovering around about the highs of $300. I mean, Spar's on the other story, but they've got their own sort of concerns. I think the big concern for me, Simon, I mean, inflation, right? I mean, PPI. Yeah. I mean, that last week's PPI number is really concerning. I mean, that headline jump up to 7.8%. I mean, that's quite a shock print, and that's at the factory gate. You know, fuel imports, plastics, fertilizers, they're all up. Electricity import costs, as we know. Put those all together, I mean, it means the current CPI, which is sitting at 4.5, is deeply uncomfortable. And I guess for now, the rates are probably going to go up the next print. And what does it all mean for SA consumer? SA consumers under pressure, obviously so.
Yeah, that's just it. I mean, the fuel price coming down, really good news. Make no mistake, the sticker shock I've had at the petrol pump's been insane. But there's a whole lot there, and that PPI is perhaps the big one. Let's have a quick look offshore. I mean, to me, emerging markets, I mean, we live in an emerging market. That's plenty for me. South Korea, man, I mean, SK Hynix, Samsung, the moves we're seeing there, they get limit up, limit down almost on a weekly basis now and have to shut the market. We are seeing some wild moves happening.
Yeah, hang on to your seatbelts, right? And I mean, those who buy an emerging market ETF think they're getting a nice spread of buyer beware. You are taking a massive bet on chips if you buy the Cosby. I mean, that's an extreme example of what I guess AI-driven concentration looks like, right? I mean, that index up, what is it, 90-odd%? I'm losing track. 95% so far year to date. But here's the thing. Samsung, SK Hynix, as you mentioned, they make up roughly 40 to 50% of that entire index. Those are the world's two most dominant, what they call HBMs, as a high bandwidth memories. So all AI data centers that are driving the big AI trade at the moment cannot be built without these two chips. So, I mean, it's a classic case of risk on, risk off. When the AI trade goes up, Cosby goes limit up.
Yeah,
when the AI sentiment wobbles, Cosby goes limit down. They shut the market, don't sell anymore, et cetera. but, I mean, really, it's wild, wild stuff. And I guess it's here to stay for now. As long as the demand for AI and the demand and these swings on both sides, it's going to be volatile.
I take your point. I actually hadn't thought of that. Of course, it's not going away anytime soon, but it must be must be wild days being a stockbrokers and market commentators.
Just to add on this AI trade, some of those that are listening, just a quick heads up, SpaceX does go into the NASDAQ index today as a member of the index. So so heads up for that. For those who expect more volatility, it's coming.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And the NASDAQ, of course, a big one. You leave it there. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Horatia Naidoo McCarthy. She's a manager in institutional clients at Allan Gray. Horatia, appreciate the time. You made a really great article recently talking around why periods of uncertainty make investors more vulnerable to behavioral biases. Why is the uncertainty making us, frankly, worse at investing because of those behavioral biases?
Thanks for that, Simon. Great to be on the show. So you asked the question, why is these uncertainties leading to our behavioral biases? And it's a great question because I think at the end of the day, we're human. So when uncertainty comes about, we amplify our emotional reactions. So we get fearful, we get greedy, and it tends to crowd out things like data and history. So rational thinking really goes out the window. And in the environments that we've been in, maybe in the last few years, it's been particularly volatile. We've seen Liberation Day with tariff shocks, the Strait of Hormuz crisis with energy shocks, shifting Fed policy in 2025. And so we've become sort of hostage to the headlines. And because of that, it's actually made us more likely to react to this noise rather than really focusing on long-term fundamentals. And so that's where I talk about, the behavioral biases or behavior gaps coming through. So it amplifies emotion and it really drives biased, very short-term decisions.
100%. And this is in some senses, and there are many of these cognitive behavioral biases, make no mistake, but this is also then what you're talking about here, particularly is recency bias. Because as you're going through the list of the bad things that are happening, I mean, I'm just running back in time and I can get back to the pandemic and it's been crazy.
Absolutely. It's been exciting every year, whether or not it's good excitement. But recency bias is a particularly prominent one. Mm-hmm. So like when we think about recency bias, and very simply, what is recency bias? It's when you look at the recent events, you give them more weight than they do, and you just assume that they're going to continue indefinitely. Now, today, you see AI has really driven equity gains. And so the belief from investors is that these winners will keep winning. And so what they're doing is they're chasing the outperformance. But on the converse side, you can also have an environment in which you are completely neglecting one area of the market because they're not sexy enough. They're not just playing in the AI space. And so you'll avoid those equities because you know, over the recent events show you that they haven't done well. So I think a lot of investors are mistaking what's happening and what has just happened for what will keep happening indefinitely.
That's a great point, because in your article, you talk around that period 2002 to 2010, where the US went broadly nowhere. If my memory serves, I think the S&P was pretty much flat over the decade, the NASDAQ way worse than just flat. And we back here in South Africa had a brilliant decade in the lead up to the 2010 and the commodity boom, foreign flows coming in, ran strong, bond yields, budget surpluses. And we kind of forget that and kind of just think it's always going to be AI and US.
Absolutely. It's actually such an interesting insight and one that we often forget. If you were to look at, and you talk about that sort of first decade starting from the early 2000s, when the SA markets did far better than the US markets did. And a lot of us who haven't had that lived experience, we don't have it in our minds. All we've ever experienced is the last 15, sort of 16 years of the US markets outperforming the South African markets. But if you were to take that entire period from the beginning of 2000, it's actually local shares that have outperformed global shares. Mm. I think if I said this to someone pre-2025, they'd be shocked. Because in 2025, we got a little taste of that, where our local markets did far better than the US markets. And people sort of sat back and said, that's possible? Yes, of course it's possible. But it's so important to check your generation, if you will. And, you know, like looking at a data like that that's coming out, I found something really interesting in the course of doing the research for the article. I found that actually formative experiences on the part of investors can often anchor their view of markets and of risk. So your older generation or your of investors who've lived through crises and have, may have experienced South Africa outperforming the US markets, they may say, actually, I want to allocate a little bit more to SA, or maybe I should focus on a bit more capital preservation because I've lived through these crises. Whereas a younger investor who's only ever experienced, you know, big tech names and AI, they'll be open to those growth assets, but they'll also have a higher risk tolerance and be more willing to lean into things like crypto or alternatives, for example. So it's interesting how we don't actually see markets as they are. We actually see them through the lens of our past.
That is fascinating, that generation experience. And now I'm thinking back to my generation. I grew up in the 80s and went to school in the 80s. So it was all of that sort of chaos and craziness. And I can see how it's impacted me, which then says, you know, the question the listeners out there is, you know, to be clear, we all have these cognitive biases in many different ways. The question is, how do we manage them? And is it as, I mean, you know, we can't just say they're not there. Is it, I suppose, just doing the old fashioned, which is go back to the basics, go back to fundamentals, go back to cash flow and balance sheets and market share?
100%. I think it is so underrated because it sounds boring, you know, focusing on the fundamentals. So I think a lot of investors, they often make these common mistakes. What they'll do is they'll panic sell in downturns and they lock in losses. Mm. They'll chase returns or whatever's hot. And so they buy high. They'll try to time the market so they miss the rebounds because inevitably they come. We saw it with Liberation Day. Things sold off. I can't tell you how many calls I got from people saying, should I sell everything? And on the flip side, you have sold, you're out of the market. Now you're trying to time when to get back in. The market bounced and you likely missed it because you're waiting it for it to fall further. And then there are those who may have, you know, a greater tendency to be more risk averse. So what they do is they flee to cash or perception of safety. And so they're underexposed when markets actually recover. And so, you know, you have to be so aware of these mistakes and have that sort of juxtaposed against what does it mean to focus on fundamentals? And the fundamentals are things like, what is my long-term plan? Yeah. Am I having a knee-jerk reaction to short-term noise and making decisions as a result?
Yeah, absolutely. And the key lesson, and it's one that I've always held very, very close to me, is that in every crisis, so far, the world has never ended. It's always recovered one way or another. We'll leave it there. That's Suresh Naidoo McCarthy, Manager, Institutional Clients. Alan Gray, appreciate the time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn. How are you managing our investment biases? I mean, the point is we are fundamentally human. It is a fundamental part of who we are and how we manage ourselves. And therefore, how do we sort of manage those biases? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Wayne Stocks from Stocks and Strauss. Wayne, appreciate the early morning time. Your University Technology Fund 2 has had final close, 400 million ZAR in there. What's the idea with the fund? I mean, by the name, you're investing into IP, into business ideas coming out of universities around South Africa.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be able to highlight this asset class, which has been well underserved for too long. Yes, our first fund was specifically mandated to invest in the commercialization of IP and research that has been generated in South African universities. And what we've now done is with Fund 2 and the follow-on, another fund, which is our seed fund thereafter, is we've added a portion of alumni-founded technology companies. Mm. So what that means is a third of our mandate, if you've gone to a South African university and have an innovative business or technology business, we can invest in you. And that the thinking there really was, and the evolution from the first to the second fund was, it's an ecosystem and we need to build on that ecosystem. So alumni are part of that ecosystem, and it also adds a little bit more sector exposure, which helps us balance our fund risk a little bit better.
Gotcha. And I mean, in a sense, I mean, universities are, by their very nature, by their design, I mean, hotbeds of innovation and ideas.
100%. You know, South Africa has incredible universities, and some of the minds that we have in the research that's coming out of it is fantastic. But nothing's happening to them. They're sitting on the shelf, right? Yeah. And research really, in its true form, optimizes for publication. So the incentives that universities have had and professors and researchers at universities have had have been kind of misaligned to commercialize those ideas where they can really have an impact in the world. You know, there's stories from many years ago where international companies have bought IP at a massively discounted amount and made billions from that. And what we want to do is retain some of that value here in South Africa. And of course, from a brain drain perspective, if we are investing in bright researchers, hopefully they'll stay in this country and make a difference.
Also true, also true. Are there particular areas, sectors, fields that you look at to invest into, or are you sort of broadly agnostic as to what's coming through?
100%. Yeah, we are a sector agnostic fund. But what you tend to find is different universities have different faculties which produce better research than others. And that's just from the sector or the area that they're in and the hubs in which they're in. So, you know, if you look at what universities are really geared to do, it's very complex problems to solve challenges or opportunities that better for the social position within the economies. So if you look at the best opportunities in which we found is when there's cross collaboration between faculties, and that's when you really get something unique. You know, if you've got a corporate, you don't you're very aligned to one sector, and you can come to a university and find three different faculties working together to solve a very unique problem in a different way, and that creates a lot of IP and opportunity.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't thought of that. Of course, across the sectors, which is the sort of thing you wouldn't get in the sort of more mature corporate space. Where are you investing? What stage? I mean, I imagine this is sort of seed early round that you're getting involved in. Some of it might be a little bit later, but this is probably more early stage investing.
Yes, that's quite correct, and that's why we've coined it a platform. Because our seed fund and our fund two now that we're investing in and actively deploying out of, the idea of the seed fund is really to get it at early seed stage. So, you know, the definition of pre-seed and seed in South Africa is slightly more loose and informal than that in America. But it is certainly pre-revenue. What we want to do is the technology has been de-risked to a point where it's been proven at a pilot stage or out of the lab, and we'll get involved at that early stage. And then our fund two is when the companies have reached a product market fit, they've generated some revenue, and we can then see that there's a demand from a customer source, and we'll then put bigger checks in at a fund two level. And that's looking at seed series A, series B stage there.
We'll leave it there. That's Wayne Stock, Stocks and Strauss, investing into IP coming out of universities. New novel, although I've seen it in some of the offshore universities, new for South Africa. Wayne, appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. On Friday, we were chatting with Skulk Lowe. He, of course, PSG Old Oak. We're talking the Mag 7 stocks. They're having a tough year. They're trading just off their 2026 lows. We asked if the Mag 7 trade was perhaps over. Two-thirds said, yeah, there's some better. Some are better than others. The rest of you were split between, nope, they're still great, and yes, now it is all about the mangoes. We need to dig into the mangoes and get a sense of what they are. They're the new fangs, the new Mag 7s. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWare website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukli, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWare Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, choosing the right benchmark.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.